Oh. Is that Millie? You're up. Millie here?
Is someone kicking off the recording?
Yeah, it started. All right, Millie, let's rock and roll. I can't hear you if you're talking. All right, Noah, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, can do. Let's see. Okay, so we've got I've got two sips to discuss. One is sort of boring, and one's a little more exciting. So the first one is adding additional view functions to the core system. This primarily came out of a discussion with VHedge about being able to more easily determine the exposure between pool and markets. And so this is the sort of thing that, you know, you could always do through forks, subgraphs, listening to events, lots of math. But, you know, it'll just be a lot easier and also allow for more interesting on-chain composability if we add some of this functionality to the core system. So just like a quick overview of how this all works again, as a pool owner, you call the set pool configuration function with a list of the pools that, the list of the markets that you'd like the pool to have exposure to. So, and with a couple of settings like weights and the max depth share value. So if you're interested in a particular pool and you want to see what markets the pool is backing, you would just call the get pool configuration function. And that'll return the pool, get the list there. We already have that. So that's good. And it's something like that's the sort of function that VHedge would use in this case, to see for a particular pool what they would want to make a hedging product for that. That's what they would, to get that list. So then the other two pieces are, it's a many to many relationship between the pools and the markets, right? So the proposal involves adding two functions. Let me actually pull it up just to make sure I get the names right here. Yeah, so we have the get pools function, which is sort of like the opposite of the get configuration. So for a given market, you can see all the pools that's backing it. One thing to note, because of that max debt distribution function, it's possible for a pool, sort of using this like stop block mechanism, to be temporarily remove debt distribution and like debt adjustments from a given market. But we get two lists. One is the markets receiving the pools that are currently receiving debt distribution changes from the market. And the other list is those that are currently stepped out of it. So now with that, we're in a world where given a pool, we can get a list of markets, given a pool. The next one is each. So that the step would provide. So, this all operates on a shares system. So if you saw that, let's say, 5 is being backed by blue, be able to provide those identifiers to that function. That market is provided in like 20% of the debt distribution, or debt adjustments, from that market would be going from that market to the given pool. So this explains it out in a little more math. Yeah, like the objective here is to just make it possible to get a better picture into how markets, or debt adjustments, I should say, right? It's like if the market is profitable, then it's reducing the debt of the pools. So their share, that's essentially their share of the profit. But also if it's a spot market and it's, you know, the spot market has created, 100 ETH of spot synthetic ETH, exposure, and in a given moment, a particular pool is exposed to 20%, then for that to be hedged, it would need to have 20 ETH of spot exposure to balance right out in that moment, at least. Cool. So I'll pause there. Happy to field any questions.
My only clarifying question is, this is, you know, first and foremost, this came about for DHedge to create DSNX for the V3 system for the Spartan pool. But my understanding is this will also help, you know, the wider ecosystem build on top of pools with a better understanding of what those pools are exposed to. So this is really important, not just for DHedge to make their life more straightforward, but for the wider ecosystem to build on pools.
This doesn't feel controversial to me. Are there any potential downsides?
I hope not. Just two view functions. Well, we'd be able to pull the data out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would just be a pain. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One question I have maybe on this is, from our experiences with P2X, it was quite a bit of a problem incorporating stuff that affects pools, maybe coming from wrappers, loans, stuff that's outside collateral, you know. And I'm not sure if are these things tackled in with this SIP, or with the scope of V3, it would be kind of different?
Yeah. The nice thing about the V design is that we've cleaned up a lot of the abstractions, so you won't just have like random loans functionality in the debt in an unaffected way. And so like, this one taken to fluctuating collateral. It's just specifically a way to get a sense of how a market, like one way to think about the V3 system is it's a CDP where you can take out a loan and then the pool can effectively allow a market implementation to mint and burn on its behalf. And it can also, drop additional debt onto the pool, for the derivatives that itself is issuing, right? And we hope that over time it's vacuuming up and burning more stable coins than it's issuing and the additional derivatives that it's issuing. That makes it a profitable market so that everyone's C ratio drops over time. And that's a good tool. Provide it with
you've been pretty average voice quality.
I thought this was just me. He's glitching. Can you improve your connection, Noah, please?
Do my best here.
Maybe rewind the last 15 seconds or so.
And switch to mobile if possible, or not mobile.
Yep. Yeah. 1 second. I'm moving. Sorry. Let's see. So much quiet as well. I hope. Okay, I can you hear me all right now? Or is it any better?
Sounds pretty good.
Okay, cool. Not sure how far to rewind, but basically, so this is really just about the relationship, like when a pool allows a market to mint and burn on its behalf, as one way to think about delegation. This function is purely about demonstrating like what that relationship looks like. So if there's some sort of loans type of derivative market that gets created, this would show what the exposure is to that. And again, it's like now with V3, we've sort of cleaned up a lot of the abstraction. So it's not just adding additional products to one large pool, and then we need to keep track of how all of these individual pieces are impacting staker net.
Thanks, Noah. I don't see any mics off for any questions. I think generally speaking, pretty uncontroversial adding a view function. I think you've answered Caleb's question about the V2 to V3 differences.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. Thank you.
Great.
Doesn't sound like there's any objection, and then it would be ready for vote. Say your piece now. Cool.
I wonder if view functions are dangerous.
I hope not.
I think there was a post by White Hats. How can someone get rocked by balance of? If I'm not mistaken, long time ago.
Noah, how's your? Yeah. How's your background? Do you want to do 329 now, or do you want to do it after somebody else?
If my connection is okay to you guys, I'm happy to get into 329. But otherwise, I can move elsewhere. But you guys.
It sounds like. Yeah, let's rock and roll. It sounds like okay.
Okay, cool. All right, so 329 is this one's a little more fun. So basically the question is like, how do we tee this up? Basically, so the scaling roadmap for Ethereum is lots of L2s, right? It's like, it's going to scale horizontally. This is like the super chain thing that Optimism's talking about. Like ultimately it's not just going to be like Optimism or Base or Arbitrum. It's going to be like Optimism 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? So like we're going to need to get into a rhythm where, we're just deploying horizontally across lots of chains. Currently, a major dependency of synthetics, V2 and V3 in many ways is, chain link push oracles. We basically can't put the system, like, we need prices reported on chain at a regular interval, that are fresh enough, and updated when large price deviations happen, for the system to operate. So the new pool-based oracles that Pivot has implemented we're using in the Perps market implementation, as we know, where we are basically settling orders with a signed price from a time in the past. This product, and presumably Chainlink's competing product when it's released, will have that functionality and also just be able to provide whatever the latest price is that Pivot or Chainlink or whatever has. And then the consumer can bring that on chain. They pay a little bit of gas to incentivize the Oracle network. They pay a little bit of gas to verify, and they pay a little bit of gas to write it on chain. So, the question is, like, how can we scale synthetics in a way that we're not waiting on Chainlink to deploy push oracles, push feeds for every price that we might launch? And then, of course, there is the broader question of, like, who's paying the gas on the push oracles. So this proposal is built around the PIF product, but again, like with the Chainlink product or whatever else, like it would be trivial to adapt the implementation. But the idea here is basically the Oracle Manager, which already has a lot of functionality to try to figure out what the best latest price is available on chain. We already have functionality where like a staleness circuit breaker where we say, hey, like the system reverts and says, we just don't know what the latest price is right now for this asset. or in a recent enough crisis for this asset, so you can't move forward. So the proposal is basically suggesting that we could create a revert message, or have a functionality added to the Oracle Manager where there's a revert message if we don't have a recent enough price, and then a client SDK like the web app or whatever would then know, okay, like instead of just waiting around for someone to go give us a newer price until this gets refreshed, it would be able to get the signal and say, okay, I need to go fetch the latest price, like as the perps traders are doing, basically, or the perps front ends are doing. It would be able to go out, retrieve the latest price, and then restage the transaction in a multi-call where it updates the price in like the first slot of that multi-call, and then in the second slot it goes forward with the transaction that now shouldn't revert because it's provided a latest price that's getting verified. So like a downside here is that it would complicate composability. Like you would need to have you would need to be using a client or some sort of SDK that can do this off-chain lookup. But that's already a requirement for the perps product. And also if Chainlink or if Pith or a trader or whoever else has already happened to provide a fresh enough price on chain, then it wouldn't revert. So you would actually be able to sort of move forward with the transaction without doing the off-chain lookup. So I imagine like if this pattern takes off, then you actually still could get pretty decent on-chain composability. It might be a little bit flaky, but if essentially every block someone cares enough about, let's say, the price of ETH to report the latest price, you're always going to have a fairly fresh price on chain anyway. But yeah, in any case, it seems like some sort of solution like this is unavoidable. Like sort of long term, we're going to need to, like, all of DeFi is going to need to move towards something like this, because again, like if we end up with this horizontally scaled scenario with Ethereum where there's just like tons of L2s, who's paying the gas on all the price updates and making sure that those price updates are fresh enough is going to be, you know, we need some other path forward. So yeah, that's basically the high level. I think it would be cool also to develop some of this into an EIP along the lines of EIP 3668, which is basically what we're using for perps. I'll pause there. But yeah, at a high level, is this making sense?
This makes a lot of sense to me. I'm curious about the UX and what kind of user behaviors you need to train people on for this system to get used.
Yeah, so it's really just going to mean that, like, so we would need to develop some sort of, like, front-end client SDK, but the user experience would be unchanged is the goal. So, like, when the app or the bot or, you know, whatever the software is that's staging the RPC request or, like, staging the transaction for MetaMask, what it would do is it would simulate the transaction before running it, and it would see that it's getting this revert that says basically, hey, we can't do this unless you come back to me with unless we have a fresher verified price for this asset on chain. And then automatically, like again, the user hasn't done anything yet. It would run that simulation. It would see this revert. It would say, okay, it would go get the fresh price update and then just replace the transaction with the multi-call that starts with the price verification. And then it would just stage that instead. So, like, from the end user standpoint, you're still just signing the transaction. It's just the client knew that it needed to also pull in a new price feed for the transaction to go through.
So the user then has to sign twice?
No, it's because it's in a multi-call. Like, that's the beauty of it. So, like, it's still just one transaction. Like, there's like a standard mic. So you can
the simulation will fail. They only sign after, after the multi-call is composed.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The simulation is like transparent to the or opaque. The user doesn't see the simulation. It's like when you go to do the action, like before it goes to stick it into MetaMask, it'll like ask the RPC, what would happen if I did this? It'll see the error and then it'll be like, okay, we don't want to do that. Actually, we want to do this multi-call. And then it'll see that that'll right. work and then stick that in MetaMask.
Do users care which Oracle they're ultimately using?
Good question. I don't know. I mean, the only way to implement this right now is with BIP, so, you know. But, again, the pattern could work with anything, though. And I also like the idea for, like, cross-chain reads. There isn't an Oracle product that can do this, but you could have a similar situation where, like, the contract would be requesting fresh data from a read of a different chain. Yeah, I mean, the degree to which users care which Oracle they're using, it's a good question, but it's like also if you interact with, any DeFi right now, I'm not sure how many end users know which Oracle yeah. is providing the price on chain that's being consumed.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Instead of increasing our dependence on an external kind of entity feed, offline, if somebody has to do the update transaction anyway, is there a reason for us not to further explore the curve pool oracles and the Uniswap V3 oracles, because we're pushing that update anyway and those just need that kind of cardinality update step for recency?
Yeah, I mean, the Oracle manager could also decide, like, the integration with the Oracle manager could also decide in XYZ scenario, we can use the Uniswap price, or we want to use the average of the TWAP Uniswap price and the latest thing from Chainlink, or like we still have all of those knobs to turn if we want them. All this like node would be saying, it would just allow us to add a new node that says, hey, this is too stale, which we already have, and
right.
a way to fix this is by going here.
Because I think when we're looking at the scaling of there being so many chains, even Pith and Chainlink supporting those chains to begin with, never mind the breadth of assets on it, we're seeing that that's not going to keep up. But there's always going to be some AMM, usually Uniswap or Curve fork on these chains right away if anybody's trading on them. And then we're lowering our dependency on these services that are kind of external as we scale it up. And it seems that might be worth us investing in it if we're looking at this super chain future and thinking that'll be a major point for us to contend with.
Yeah, totally. And that'll continue to be an option. I mean, I think part of the issue with using AMMs for TWAPs is that there's a fairly limited number of assets where the liquidity is deep enough that it can't really be manipulated. And that tends to be with crypto native assets anyway. So, yeah, I think there are definitely use cases where that's good, but with Synthetix as a derivatives liquidity protocol for off-chain assets, Curve isn't, you know,
yeah.
we can't rely on it very much. Yeah.
Have you guys been connected with the DeFi Wonderland people and their price oracle wrapper that they've been building out? Because it's specifically for dealing with assessing the liquidity on pools to use as that. I know they said they were going to reach out to core team at one point. But that might be an interesting conversation to explore as well, because they've got some solutions around that.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't heard from them personally, but that sounds relevant, so I can check it out.
Oh, I guess my other question is, it sounds like we're now having to maintain an SDK that every single front end is going to need to use, which may kind of fly in the face of our goal of progressive decentralization of all these components. And I'm wondering how you think about that long term and the need for there to be a singular maintained SDK in all front ends.
Yeah. So, I mean, this goes back to like, ideally this would be an EIP, where the revert would say something like, I'm looking for something of this, like a pithnet price of this ID, and you need to go find the gateway and you need to go come up with a way to satisfy this. And so there would be, like, I think in a dream world, this would be a sort of community maintained standard protocol where a similar revert message could say, hey, we want like a cross-chain read from this Oracle provider, or we want a price from this other Oracle provider or whatever, right? So like, I think there is a world where this could just become a generic standard. In terms of practically speaking, who would be maintaining this SDK in the short term? Like, I mean, it would be nice if Tiff did it. I haven't asked. it should be fairly simple code, at least to get like the basic functionality working. This is optional, right? It's like we don't need to use this node. It's like only in scenarios where I think we have no other choice would we be standing this up. So,
yeah, I'm just thinking our risk bus number here, where now every single site who's plugging into synthetics has like this one common element in their tech stack. And let's say there's an error or a package updates poorly in that repo. All those sites are down or vulnerable at the same time. It's not really doesn't align with that decentralization point. So I think it's something worth us thinking about from that angle.
Oh, totally. I mean, ideally there would be a million client libraries, but we need to start with one. You know? Yeah, but definitely, I think the goal is to make this as generic of a standard as possible. So as many Oracle providers, as many protocols, whatever, would also be a building tool around it.
Your background noise truly is performance art today, Noah.
That sounds like a spooky ghost of some variety.
Sorry, there's a helicopter overhead. Let me unmute.
I don't know if you can see the Gutpol chat. Is there anything else in there that I don't think there's any questions? CyberDuck, you kind of echoed Millie's question around who runs the node client. I think we've addressed that.
Yeah, so the question, I think the question would be like, yeah, what's the gateway? Like, where do you go for the, like, what's the URI to get the signed price feed to bring back on chain and verify? With PIF, like, anyone can run a node that connects to like the PIFnet, prices and can pull off of there. And so this is actually something where I think we can make an improvement on EIP-3668, where you're supposed to encode on chain, the URI, like http://pipnet.whatever, to go fetch it. I think a better pattern here is to get that out of here. We would come up with this standard and it would say, okay, this is sort of there's an identifier, like this is a type of, off-chain, asset that needs to be brought on chain and verified. And then it would be in the client library, where it would make the decision of which gateway to use or how to go fetch that.
Doesn't sound like there's any additional questions on this. Nor is this something that's ready in your mind to be put forward for a vote?
Yep. Yeah, I think it's ready to go.
Any opposition from any other members on the council? Doesn't sound like it. DSAC's thumbs up. Everyone else is quiet. Great. We can put that up for vote.
Sweet. Thanks, everyone.
Two more. Thanks, Noah. We've got two more here. Millie, how's your audio?
Audio check.
Audio's good. All right. SIP 323.
Yes, thank you. Good to see everyone. It's been a while, a few months at least. So, okay, I'll be brief as possible. The SIP is pretty simple, pretty straightforward. At first, it was kind of controversial. but it seems non-controversial at this point. Seems like there's broad consensus in support of it. So the one area that was sort of unrevised when I initially posted the draft SIP was what the V2 assets would be renamed to, which I'd revised in the SIP now as well. So it's pretty much complete and ready to go. So the basic rundown is that the plan was to have all like V3 market assets with the SNX ticker initially before the asset name. So it would be like SETH would be SNX ETH, SUSD would be SNX USD. So I mean, I honestly, a lot of people in the community like thought that was flawed from the beginning, and it was kind of a meme to like have it change, and like nobody really knew if it was serious or not. But I think like when we look at like the real reason why it was chosen, it didn't really, you know, it I think it would create more confusion, rather than, you know, like take away from to add to the reasoning as to why it was decided to be changed in the first place. And so the reason it was decided to be changed was kind of the negative press around SUSD throughout its history. And also to like differentiate from the other stablecoin because it's not going to be fungible with, V2 SUSD. So essentially, you know, the idea was to come up with something totally different. And I admit it's totally different, but it's probably not a step in the right direction because, you know, a lot of the negative things around SUSD obviously was, the fact that it was collateralized only by SNX, which is like very limited collateral, you know, not always the most liquid. And so like it would add further to that confusion to have V3, which is going to be multi-collateral SUSD, you know, being called SNX USD, right? So I, you know, anyway, it's a tongue twister even when I start talking about, SNX USD, I feel like, but, I think the community is pretty well in support of changing the V2 SNX, SUSD, and SETH and SBTC and all the assets, the spot assets, to SNX USD and SNX ETH and SNX BTC because they are backed by SNX. And to keep SUSD and the S, you know, prefix ticker going forward in V3 and consistently across all the assets. So yeah, that's pretty much the market, the SIP.
Sorry.
And it's basically ready to go vote.
I zoned out for a moment and then you were talking about collateral. Can I just verify, the TLDR here is, V2 assets will get the SNX, prefix. And V3 will retain SUSD and S assets?
Correct.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Strong support.
My issue with that, which I get it kind of thematically makes sense, is that in the V3 system, all the code says SNX XYZ. So
redeploy it. Vegas Octagon if you disagree, Kev.
Can't we just call the old one something else instead of SNX? Just to, we're going to have enough confusion because a lot of stuff's going to break, and people are going to get confused. It's going to be really confusing to have the V2 things called SNX on the front end.
You could call it end. Like old, because I guess the idea is we're not really using it anymore anyway, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. So you mean like? Do you mean like the actual code for the V2, like, because we can't change that, you're concerned, like, there might be confusion there?
V3, apparently.
Yeah, I just feel like we're asking for more confusion by intentionally choosing a vanity label for the V2 system that is used throughout the entire V3 system. Maybe I'm over-indexing on that.
I think, you know what, it would depend realistically on how much overlap there is. Like, if there isn't really any overlap, I don't think it would matter because it would literally just be a vanity thing, but like if there is, you know, if there's going to be people building on V3 that are going to, they're going to be cross-referencing V2 a lot, like then I could see, you know, an issue. But again, I'm not really talking about, maybe Adam would speak to it better.
I mean, we want a whole ecosystem of developers to be building on synthetics V3. They're going to look at it, they're going to see SNX everything on the inside, and then they're going to look in the market and they're going to see SNX things that are going to be the old.
That would be confusing as fuck. So I think if the V3 is SUSD, we should make sure that the V2 ones are renamed to something that is not SNX USD, but something like old SUSD or just old USD or something that shows it is not.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? That makes actually sense when I think about it now. And initially, I had like not included that part just for that particular reason. I thought maybe the community might have some input there where SNX USD might not be ideal. But like, I guess there was sort of a Kane kind of press that, you know, this should be SNX USD. But I do see the point now that you're making. So, and initially I did sort of think we should like just go with legacy, like just put legacy in the ticker for SUSD, the old one, because it does sort of have like this mental sort of like effect on the holders where they see the ticker on CoinGecko and then all of a sudden like it spurs them to go do the migration and to like migrate the new system. So it does have that kind of incentive, like yeah. It does create like this mental incentive. So my initial thought was to go with legacy, but I kind of left that open the initial part of the SIP, and I guess there was some community feedback to go with just SNX USD for the V2 version, but I'm totally open to, you know, going back and revising that.
Yeah, I'm cool with like legacy or old or like genuinely whatever, as long as V3 gets the SUSD and we're not creating confusion. So I'll still vote for it, whatever the other one is changed to.
Anyone else have any input on that? Doesn't sound like it. Sounds like we just need to decide on what that old ticker will be. The old, yeah, V2 tickers will be. And then we can go to a vote.
Is there some like, some support for like putting just like legacy in the ticker, like legacy SUSD or like SUSD legacy?
I'm talking a lot, but are there any engineers that can chime in here? Because my only concern would be legacy USD gets kind of long,
and I don't know if that gas fits price typically. It's just the one-time update on the ticker, assuming you can update it. So it's not going to have an impact on any other use, and there's longer shit on CoinGecko, so it's readable.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about S2? Like, you know, then when we go to 4, we can do S3. For V3.
Because then people are going to think it's the update. Like it's the V2.
Yeah.
I'm good with legacy. I also jokingly said, you know, SUSD Kane's vision would be fucking hilarious, but I'm good with legacy.
Yeah, one thing I'll say from experience, as someone who's like, you know, been through like multiple V1, V2, V3 deployments of stablecoins and different tokens, like, it does help when there's like, it's really explicitly written in this token that like, it's getting wound down, like support is being wound down. Like that, like as a holder, you would appreciate that, I think. Like if you know that this stablecoin you're holding is going to be wound down eventually, or at least support for it, you know, broad support for it is going to be wound down.
And does legacy communicate that to you, or does it feel like it's an old version but still in use? Like how do you as a user receive it?
I would see like legacy would prompt me to like look into it like right away, like type of thing. And usually CoinGecko, one good thing about like these at least CoinGecko is like they usually have like this banner at the top that tells you about the migration. It gives pretty good details of what it is. But even if they don't, like I feel like seeing something as explicit as like legacy in the name would spur me to like, you know, look into at least what's going on and what, and usually like if they see the migration process is like wide open, like it shouldn't be an issue for them. Or, you know, as long as it doesn't close off and, like, there's no time limit.
I'm good with that.
I like legacy.
All right, cool. So I will update it with that, and we can, I guess, push it back to vote and see how it goes. This is not a meta GovSIP, right? So.
I mean, it's okay. Sam is on the council, so we would still get it through.
All right. Okay. So, yep, that's it for me then.
Thank you, Millie.
Thanks, Millie.
Thanks for driving that one forward. I was skeptical, but you converted me. Yeah, the migration plan will, there'll be more information coming about the migration plan, the stable coins and the timing of that. I think the SIP was just confined to the naming. All right, let's move on. Last one. 2023. Who's this? Gundo, are you here?
Yes, sir.
Come on down. Stage is yours.
So this tip is for listing Mondelo on Synthetix Verb V2, which, as you know, is already on the legacy Verb, so I don't expect it to be converted here or anything. Any question?
Shortest SIP proposal I've ever heard so far. were you asking if there's any questions?
Is there any reason we didn't add this over? Because I think it was on the V1 and then we didn't have it on the V2, and I don't see a good reason, but was it just oversight?
Yeah. Just need someone to do it.
Yeah, I proposed the V1 version of this and just didn't even realize that there was never an inclusion on V2. So I think unless somebody else was talking about it, it was just purely an oversight. So appreciate it, Gunboats.
I love you.
It wasn't probably important as a volume driver. So maybe that's one reason why it wasn't pushed forward as other stuff.
And
there seems to be, increasing aggression towards privacy coins, delisting from centralized exchanges. I think Binance recently pushed through some of these, in certain countries, including Spain, they were going to delist certain privacy coins. They backtracked on some of these, but I'm curious how these CeFi delistings affect our trading. Is it a boon or a bane for trading on our platform?
Is that purely spot or is perps
included in that deprecation? Because when they remove the spot, they're removing the perps. And it's so far only in EU countries because of the new regulation there around reporting counterparties on exit transactions. As long as there's enough of them that we still have a Chainlink Oracle, if anything, it's a plus for us because there'll be nowhere else with perps. So if these secondary small exchanges are still offering it and Asian-based exchanges are still offering it and we can get a Chainlink price, that's probably a plus for us. But we have to watch that the price isn't reported from too few places, so maybe that's worth keeping an eye on. I don't know if we want to if Chainlink's API or anything like that has something we could hook up a keeper to make sure there's good diversity of source prices in the future. But other than that, it should be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, anyway, the liquidity would be calibrated to meet the expectation, the liquidity that's out there to reflect the amount of liquidity available out there. So. For example, we listed recently, stuff like STETH that doesn't have a lot of on-chain liquidity, off-chain liquidity. And, it's fine. I think we can work with the current purpose mechanism to, reflect that liquidity in terms of slippage.
I think my question about this would be if it does this and any other coin that we list that has declining off-chain liquidity, is that some? How active is our monitoring of that?
Sure. So we do a lot of monitoring on it, a lot weekly basis. Aside from that, hopefully the protocol aims to move away from off-chain monitoring. And the way it is, we will do that is with E3, where the liquidity allocated to certain markets would depend on stakers, you know, contribution to markets. So if you're not too comfortable providing liquidity to Monero, then you'd remove your credit capacity from it. So it would be like more of a Uniswap kind of scenario where liquidity depends on who contributes capacity to a certain pool.
Thanks. No other questions from me. Doesn't sound like this has any outstanding questions. No other questions from the community. So I don't think there's any reason why this can't go up for vote. And that brings us to the end of our four SIP presentations. Thanks, Gumbo. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, community. Thanks, council. We'll see you next week.
Thanks all.
Thank you.